The Athletic.
Hello, I'm Dan Bardell.
And I'm Flo Lloyd-Hughes.
And welcome to the Athletic Football Podcast, where every Wednesday we pick out one article from all the brilliant writing available on The Athletic and put the authors under the spotlight.
Irving, step back, a three! Kyrie Irving with his own version of the electric slide.
It's obviously annoying that I've caught it twice, but I haven't been vaccinated.
Vaccinated or unvaccinated, we can't have a discussion as to why we want to be vaccinated or why we don't want to be vaccinated. It's just you're that side, we're this side.
Today our focus is on a bumper piece contributed to by Athletic journalists on both sides of the Atlantic. It's called Sport and the Global Vaccine Fight. Taz Mellis, host of our NBA podcast No Dunks, and the Athletic's Adam Crafton will join us shortly to discuss the mixed figures in the US and the UK, dressing room conspiracies, and the weird secrecy around football and the COVID-19 vaccine.
We're also going to hear from the last person I want to hear from after Villa's weekend collapse. It's Tim Spears on how Wolves have managed to buck the trend when it comes to the vaccine uptake from Premier League footballers. Obviously going to be great speaking to Taz as well. He's going to break down the big story we've all been hearing about with NBA star Kyrie Irving, who is unvaccinated and unable to play. Right then, Flo, let's bring on this week's guests. A big welcome to Taz Mellis, host of the No Dunks podcast, one of the original basketball podcasts. And we're also joined by Adam Crafton, who is a reporter for The Athletic as well. Welcome, guys. A pleasure to have you on. Let's start then, Taz, with you. The NBA. Now, for people who don't know much about Kyrie Irving, I like my NBA. He's a big, big deal, and there's a big story going on with him at the moment to do with vaccinations and COVID in the NBA world. Can you just go a little bit into detail about the article that you did on him for The Athletic?
Well, he is a big deal. Yeah, he's been a divisive figure in the NBA for several years now. He's an outspoken guy, and he made his way out of Cleveland after winning a championship there with LeBron James. And he didn't want to be sort of in the shadows of LeBron. He didn't appreciate the way he was treated there. He moved on from that run to go and play with the Boston Celtics. He did seem like he was going to stay there for a long period of time, but then told the Celtics fans, although he wanted to be there long term, he decided to bounce to the Brooklyn Nets. And now he's with Kevin Durant. And the last year or so, he's kind of been in the good and the bad books with NBA fans, because he's said beginning of last year, I'm not going to talk to the media, just not going to do it. He released this Instagram post where he said the media are pawns. I mean, he didn't do it directly, kind of did it indirectly, and then came back and said, listen, I wasn't calling you guys pawns. In the end, he came back and talked to the media. And now there's this scenario where he is in a very, very unique situation because of local mandates in the NBA. It has nothing to do with the actual NBA itself, but local cities, local mandates in New York, in Los Angeles, and San Francisco mandated if you're going to play on a team, if you're going to be in a gym, then you've got to be vaccinated. And four of the five teams, the Lakers, the Clippers, the Knicks, the Warriors, now that Andrew Wiggins is vaccinated, have got all their players vaccinated. But the one player from all those local mandates that hasn't been vaccinated is Kyrie Irving.
People saying all these things about what's going on with me, and it's just not true. Pay attention to what's going on out in the real world. You know, people are losing their jobs to these mandates. People are having to make choices with their own lives, which I respect. You know, and I don't want to sit here and play on people's emotions either. Just use logic. You know, what would you do? You know, if you felt uncomfortable going into the season when you were promised that you would have exemptions or that you didn't have to be forced to get the vaccine, like, why are you putting it on me? You know, like, this is not part of, you know, what's going on in conversations with scientists, physicians, and doctors. I'm just a hooper, right? Like, I'm just a person who's being utilized as an example. For some odd reason, you know, people love to have my name in the mix of just some BS.
Kyrie Irving could play on the road. He could go play, because of the way the U.S. rules are, he could go play 41 games on the road would be totally fine, but at home, when he's playing in New York, when he's playing in Brooklyn, he's not allowed to play. So there was a little bit of sort of an ambiguous thing going on at the beginning when the mandates came down. Steve Nash said, well, we know that Kyrie's not going to be with us at home, but he could be on the road playing with us as sort of a part-time player. But then the next day it was squashed by the Brooklyn Nets GM, Sean Marks, and Joe Tsai ended up speaking on it, the owner of the Brooklyn Nets, and they said, listen, you can't be a part-time player. And so now Kyrie Irving is basically one of one in the NBA, a guy who is unvaccinated and can't play for his home team. Now, there are other players who are unvaccinated. By my math, there's approximately 20 players of the 500 or so full-time and part-time players that are unvaccinated. They're up to 96% in the NBA. But Kyrie Irving is in a unique situation where unless he gets vaccinated, he won't be playing at all, while guys like Bradley Beal and Michael Porter Jr., teams that don't have local mandates, can go play anywhere, can go play in Brooklyn, can go play in New York, can go play in Golden State, just because of their unique scenarios. That's just how we work here in the U.S. There's a local mandate here, local mandate there, local mandate there. And Kyrie Irving, again, he's a one of one. He has left it open. He hasn't said that he is not going to get vaccinated. But as Shams Charania on The Athletic reported, Kyrie Irving has said his main issue is that mandates have caused people to lose their jobs. And so he's backing those people. He's backing the people that didn't want to get vaccinated and were mandated to and walked away from their occupations because of that. And currently, that's what Kyrie Irving is doing as well. He's saying he doesn't want to play. Well, he doesn't want to get vaccinated. I shouldn't say he doesn't want to play, because if the Nets gave him the option to play on the road, I think he would. He gets paid for his road games. Even though he's not playing, he gets paid for his road games because there are no mandates there, but he doesn't get paid for his home games. So essentially getting paid 50% of his salary not to play. It's a strange, strange scenario, but that's where we are.
It's interesting that that mandating element is a big one for him. Adam, in your piece, which was specifically about footballers, there's more of a sort of a conspiracy element to it and a lack of education information. But was anything about that forced requirement, did anything come up as a pushback on that?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose to give context, we, myself and Simon Hughes, wrote about this on The Athletic. I think it was the first week of August when we did it, because at that time there was a sentiment that at the start of October you were going to have to need to possibly be vaccinated in order to enter football stadiums as a supporter. I don't think that worked out in the end, but that was what was the expectation. And I suppose therefore the piece was looking at, well, if supporters are going to be expected to be vaccinated, then there's probably going to be an expectation as well upon players and coaches or officials who represent the Premier League. You know, what I'd say is that the figures in football, in certainly in the Premier League, have been slow to progress. Figures that came out today, I think, now take it above 80%, at least for, is that for double or first vaccination?
I think it's 68 for double and just over 80 for first, yeah. I think, those numbers today.
So it's still, you know, significantly behind US sport. The reasons for it were kind of multiple. There were conspiracies. We spoke to a number of different players, medical professionals, strength and conditioning coaches, people who are in contact with players every day who have been part of these discussions. One of the first things that a lot of people said is that, you know, a bit like all young people, there's lots of different WhatsApp groups going on and people are influenced in different ways. And there was a sense of, there's some conspiratorial thinking. There was a player who spoke to Simon, who is an international footballer, who was talking about, you know, over all the years sitting at the back of a bus on the way back from games, how there's been debates over whether Tupac's still alive and, you know, who was really involved in 9/11 and those sort of, you know, discussions that you sort of find at the sort of dark corners of the internet. And in some ways you can kind of separate that as that's just young guys being dumb on the back of a bus on the way back from a sports event, right? I think where it's quite interesting is where it goes into that intersection of health. You know, there's a really interesting story I was told about a championship club last season where a lot of the squad had started watching the Game Changers documentary on Netflix. And as a result, over half the squad in the space of a week decided to become vegan. And the medical professionals at the club were concerned, not because of that you can't live a very healthy life as a vegan and be a sportsman, but because of the very sudden change to diet, nutrition, and the impact that that might have on sports performance. And it led to them having this sit down presentation where they had to explain this to the players. And I think by the end of it, only a couple were still turning immediately vegan by the end of it. But I suppose it gives you a window into how quickly ideas can spread amongst football players. And that's not to say the Game Changers documentary is misinformation in the same way as some of the stuff that's gone on around vaccines.
Taz, I've just got the numbers in front of me here. So 95% of NBA players have been vaccinated and 99% in the WNBA. The NFL has got 94% of players are all vaccinated, along with more than 99% of the league and team staff. And the NHL has got a 99% uptake as well. At the moment, it's the baseball that's lagging behind with around 87%. Adam just talked about this slow uptake, it being a slow burner of the players getting the jab. Was it slow in America, or did it just all, did the players just go with it straight away?
I'd say depending on the sport, it varied from sport to sport. You've mentioned the NBA at 95%. Got to say there's been an uptick. They've hit the 96% mark. Got to always keep those percentages in line. Adam Silver in his press conference before the season yesterday said we're up to 96%, and he actually wanted the Players Association to sign off on mandatory vaccinations. And from the league perspective, from the front office perspective, he was okay with doing that, but the players wanted to have their choice. Kyrie Irving, a big part of the Players Association, and I'm not sure how much he was involved in that decision, but the players did not want to be have that sort of mandatory across the league. So yeah, it sort of varies from sport to sport. It really does. And Adam brings up a good point about how information spreads, and the Game Changers doc being a good example of how players are pretty susceptible to reading something and then buying it, just jumping in. Yeah, I watched the Game Changers doc as well. I thought, maybe I might do this vegan thing as well. I definitely did not. But, it's definitely in the U.S. we have all of these threads of information happening. And I think the Game Changers doc is one example of, they watch one documentary and then their medical experts talk to them. That's really only two strains of information. What happened here in the U.S. was that there were hundreds, thousands of sources of information for all of these players to glob onto, and that's what happened. It there wasn't really one central message that happened in 2020 and then 2021. So players were getting it from different areas, and I think the WNBA stat that you just brought up, it's an incredible number at 99%. They really made sure that their Players Association, their front office, their league was the one source of info to try and dispel myths. They got out in front of it and had Zoom sessions to talk to their players right off the bat from the get-go, and not shame them or embarrass them or allow them to go public and discuss it there. And maybe it's a tiny benefit of being a bit of a smaller league in comparison to other leagues. But that aside, they just got out and talked to their players. And that strain of information, that source of information was, I say strain of information, I got the variance on the mind, obviously. the NBA is obviously pretty close behind, and Adam Silver, as the commissioner, believes that that number will go up as the months go on.
And the WNBA was such a kind of shining example of how to do it right. But how have the other leagues managed to sort of catch up, or manage to still then persuade so many players to get the vaccination, given, like you said, how many sources of information they are? How are they still pushing into that 90%?
The mandates have changed things. The mandates that have come down in America over the last month or so in a lot of different industries, in every workplace with 100 or more employees, is mandated to get the vaccine. I think that has also changed things. So you see a lot of people deciding to walk away from those mandates, but most say, I'd like to continue to work. And so I think that sort of had an effect. The mandates did make it real here in the U.S. that things are being pushed. The vaccine is definitely being pushed, and it's extremely, extremely safe. And one other thing is that it was approved beyond this emergency approval, which was the first step here in the U.S. It was emergency approval for a long period of time here, for about 6 months, and then it was approved as a complete vaccination, as completely safe. And so that was another hurdle for the people who didn't think that the vaccine was entirely safe.
Adam, will the messaging be the same from each and every Premier League club? Will the players at each 20 Premier League clubs be getting the same information?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the clubs have even gone to the extent of inviting in government medical professionals to present on the benefits of the vaccine, the safety of the vaccine. I think one of the interesting things, I was reading a post on LinkedIn the other day that a sports lawyer, Johnny Maydill from Sheridan's law firm, sent me, and that says that, you know, neither the UK or Irish governments have actually published guidance which focuses specifically on COVID-19 vaccines and the implications of sports participation, which therefore means that clubs and leagues in the UK are having to go by, I suppose, the existing framework of law. And that goes into things like equality law, employment law, and that's where individual choice becomes quite a significant factor in terms of how you treat employees that work for you. So the information is being provided, but they're having to go down a route, given that there's nothing mandatory, of, I suppose, gentle persuasion. And I think the other thing is, and I'm sure this is the case at elite levels in other sports as well, footballers are not used to being ordered what to do, right? You know, they are normally, you know, the tail wagging the dog rather than the other way around. So they're being dictated to by agents, by players, over new contracts, over where the next transfer is going to be. So the balance of power, I think, needs to shift a little bit, because really it needs clubs to just be saying, look, guys, you need to be getting on with this and doing it. So I think that's probably a factor as well. I think there's then other factors. One of the factors that was particularly raised to me was, you know, this vaccine was approved quickly. We know that. We know that the vaccine was approved quickly. The majority of people in the general public have taken the view that the benefits of the vaccine outweigh any risk that there may be. But I think there are some players who have come to the view that, you know, we are finely tuned athletes. What if something happens to me that takes away in any way from what I'm doing on a day-to-day basis if I don't 100% know about this? And of course, the clubs are providing all the information and all the advice. But I do think that's been consistently one of the things that we've heard from players. Now, absolutely not presenting that as my view. I'm saying that's what we've heard from players.
What I think is really interesting as well is what you said, Adam, is from my perspective, I always think footballers are actually really easily influenced, because they've spent from the age of like 10 being told where to be, what time, what to eat, what to wear. You know, their life is so structured, and that's why for so many of them, when they stop playing football, life is really difficult and chaotic, because the structure that they've had, the routine that is really strict, goes out the window. So you almost think that the scientists or the medical professionals, whatever, within the clubs would hold a lot of influence, because they're the ones who've been guiding them, you know, for years and been so in tune with their bodies. And the fact that that's not working now in this capacity, how has that trust suddenly disappeared in some cases?
Well, I don't think that trust has always been there. I think that's one of the really interesting things. I mean, several elite players, I can remember, I'm not going to name them now, but they will have their own, they won't follow the club's recovery protocol, for example. They'll have their own strength and conditioning coach. They'll have their own dietitian or nutritionist. And I think that's particularly true of the more, the really, really, really top tier players, that, you know, they have their ways of doing things that they've picked up over the years. They work with their individual coaches, not necessarily the club coaches. I remember I was told a story recently about, Big Six Premier League club where a world leading name player was working with his own recovery coach after games, and he started doing a couple of things that the club recovery coaches were looking at thinking this is a bit odd, but he can crack on, he's doing all right by himself. But then they had other players in the dressing room started to copy it because they were like, well, I want to be like him, and they had to step in and say, actually, it might work for him and we can't really intervene on him because he is such a big player, but our advice to you would be not to do that. It was quite interesting recently, when I suppose an example of that on a far smaller scale, when Cristiano Ronaldo arrived at Manchester United, and we're told stories about how all of a sudden the other players have stopped eating desserts the night before the game, or a different story about they no longer have sugar in their tea. And that's just, I suppose, a microcosm of how, habits are picked up, when you're around successful people in an environment. So I think that probably goes some way to explaining it as well.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
I don't understand. Maybe I'm a little bit naive, but I don't understand 100% why we are not allowed to give advice. So why it sounds like if I say I'm vaccinated, other people say, how can you say you are vaccinated? How can you tell me I should be vaccinated? I explain it for myself. A little bit like drink driving. We all probably were in a situation where we had a beer or two and thought we still could drive. But after law, we are not allowed to drive anymore, so we don't drive. But this law is not there for protecting me when I drank two beer and want to drive. It's there for protecting all the other people because I'm drunk or pissed and want to drive a car. And we accept that as a law. I don't take the vaccination only to protect me. I take the vaccination to protect all the people around me. And I don't understand where that is a limitation of freedom. Because if it is, then not being allowed to drink and drive is a limitation of freedom as well.
Taz, the US athletes are so open with their jab status, talking about having the vaccination. UK, not so open. First to you, why do you think that there's such a big difference?
Well, I would say it's really sort of individual based. There's some people are definitely private about it, and some people are less comfortable talking about it. I think, sort of just going back to what Adam was saying, it kind of ties into player empowerment. We're in the US, and especially in basketball, players have become more empowered over the last few years to, basically control their own destiny, for lack of a better term. They want to set the parameters. Adam was talking about, setting their own, rehab routine and all that. That's happening a lot in the NBA as well. There was a situation in the playoffs where Donovan Mitchell of the Utah Jazz was sort of at odds with his training staff and that type of thing. I think just to tie it into that, where players are definitely just more vocal in general, in definitely in America, definitely in basketball, players, especially basketball. I think we know in the NBA, they are so upfront. Again, depends individual to individual, but so upfront about what they believe in. And Kyrie Irving is a good example of that. He's spoke out on many causes and been a proponent of many things over the last few years. So I think really it's players finding their voice over the last few years and getting out there and talking about it and deeming it worthy enough to be a hill that they die on, to be something that they need to talk about to help out other individuals. It's still a bit of a prickly pear. It's still a bit of a touchy subject here in the U.S. Even to this day, even though there's full approval on the vaccination here in the U.S. over the last couple months, it's just been absolutely politicized, and the people who, whether they believe in conspiracies or not, there are a lot of people obviously who don't and trust the government and don't trust science. So it's something that isn't solved by isn't really a comfortable topic amongst a lot of NBA players. I think going back, you'd see the big name players speak out about. Whether it's not social justice or other issues, but in this instance, there aren't a ton of them. Now they can say they're vaccinated, but there isn't really anybody there are a few people, but not really a ton of people sort of claiming that this is going to save lives in the NBA. They kind of keep it to themselves and keep it to their families and go on living their lives.
Taz, what's interesting about that is when the British National Health Service was starting to launch the vaccination process, I actually expected that they would, use high-profile sportsmen to really rev up the campaign, whether it's in promotional videos or posters, and really get them on board. And it was striking to me that didn't happen, because it seemed like a very obvious way to persuade.
I think there was Moeen Ali, wasn't there, in one campaign trying to encourage British Asians to get the vaccine, and that was about it in terms of sporting representation. It wasn't a lot, was there?
Yeah, and I think Gareth Southgate, the England manager, at one point, I can't remember if he did a statement or took part in an advert supporting the vaccine, and he since said it was, of all the things he said since becoming England manager. And remember, he's been, pretty vocal on a number of societal issues. He said it was the most amount of sort of abuse and emails that he'd ever received, complaining that he'd, really been vocal in saying this, this vaccine is a good idea. And then it was a little bit of a more uncomfortable international period for him during the last couple of games, because there were stories suggesting that there were some high-profile England international players who have not been vaccinated yet.
We're public figures and in the public eye, so definitely people are probably wondering or asking if they take it, maybe I'm going to take it, or if they're not going to take it, I'm not going to take it. So
England and AC Milan player Fikayo Tomori, while on international duty with England.
I don't think it's my place to kind of put it out there and say I've done this and not done that to kind of influence other people. It's just to be, every single person to their own, if they want to do it or not.
And I suppose the other issue that we may come to is that the World Cup in Qatar in 2022, it's been reported that the organisers may seek to make it mandatory to be vaccinated to play at that tournament, which will bring in a whole new debate as well. But, it looks like the Premier League is eking towards a place which is far more comfortable for them. And, I do think as the world tries to open up again and the need to have a vaccination, to travel to a lot of countries, I think that will probably be ultimately the thing that takes most of them over the line and on board, that it would just make their lives a hell of a lot easier from a logistics point of view to go and visit their families or go on holiday and things like that.
Yeah, and that could be an issue with the US, even just coming up into this season. Players are going to be restricted if they are unvaccinated. And I believe that was, in part what the NBA wanted to try and entice them to get the vaccine, because you get tested far less frequently. You're supposed to stay home basically at all times, unless you're buying groceries or picking up your kids. And it's such a gray area. Like how is that going to be enforced? And you're supposed to stay away from going to public areas if you're an unvaccinated NBA player. So I think those rules, whether you're at home or you're on the road, you're supposed to just basically stay in your hotel room. I mean, those were put in place to try and get those last. Yeah, as I said, it's like 20 NBA players. So I think, we start talking about this big number, specifically with basketball, being one of the a lot of high profile players like Kyrie Irving and such. But it's just 20 NBA players, really, when it comes down to it. And so they have been a model of for the rest of society, if if we were trying to get to a herd immunity number here in the U.S. And they did speak out. I mean, you did remind me that there were some public service announcements where NBA players were involved months ago, but it was almost too late. The way the conversation devolved here in the U.S. on social media platforms, on YouTube and on Facebook, where things got taken down like after 18 months of, by some reports, like 40% of the vaccine information on Facebook was misinformation. It was just way too late. And Flo, you brought up a question about what is driving these players to get vaccinated. And I think the opposite of the answer is true. The information is probably helping them get vaccinated, but the misinformation is helping them stay the other direction as well. And those floodgates opened for a long, long period of time. That's just 18 months on the internet of misinformation. I mean, that's like a lifetime of misinformation. It's just so much info that was out there. And so when the players did get into some public service announcements, it was almost too late.
Yeah, fascinating discussion. Plenty more to come. You're listening to the Athletic Football Podcast. And next, we're going to hear from Tim Spears on how Wolves have managed to successfully vaccinate their entire squad.
I mean, well, for a start, Wolves don't see it as a big deal, really, which I guess is part of the reason behind their success in this, that they just see it as quite normal and are surprised, really, that no other or few other Premier League clubs have managed to do this and have this success with the vaccine. But, the reasons behind it, you sort of have to go back to day one of the pandemic, really. And I wrote about this extensively at the time, during the first lockdown, because there was nothing else to write about. But Wolves were ahead of the curve, really, on the pandemic. And the chief reason for that would be their owners, their ownership, Fosun, who were actively involved in things in China in terms of equipment and later in terms of a vaccine. And basically, Wolves, their chairman, Jeff Shi, and their owners back in Shanghai had first-hand expertise and first-hand knowledge of what had happened in Shanghai and China for sort of January, February time last year. Obviously, everybody knows that things really got serious in the UK mid-March time. When things were really starting to lock down here in the UK, things were slowly starting to go the other way in China and people were returning to work. So Fosun and Jeff Shi, like I said, had kind of seen what had happened there, seen what had worked in terms of social distancing, in terms of masks, in terms of lockdowns, etc. And as soon as football started to slow down, because of course it didn't grind to an immediate halt, it slowed down at first. Wolves played a behind closed door game in Greece. So they ended up being one of the first, if not probably the first, to close down their training ground. They quickly put structures in place. They set up their own task force, internally within the club. They gave masks to everybody. Two masks, one sort of normal mask and then one heavy duty mask. This is all pre-lockdown. This is all pre-Boris Johnson's announcement. And then owners Fosun, they own the UK's only ventilator manufacturer. And so they had a lot to do with that. They worked to develop a vaccine overseas, Fosun did as well, and later worked on the production and distribution of that vaccine to tens of millions of vaccinations across the world. And they were also, very active in the community, sending out equipment, mostly ventilators and masks, those type of things to local health services. So you've got an environment where the players feel very secure that their owners know exactly what they're doing. And the players were immediately given schedules and worked from home, and each player was had gym equipment and fitness equipment hand delivered to their homes. Food was sent out regularly, so they didn't have to worry about, I know it's prima donna footballers, but they didn't have to worry about anything. And Dr. Matthew Perry, who's been the club doctor for a couple of decades and is extremely professional and nice guy, worked very closely with Nuno and Jeff Shi, and they were in constant communication with the players via WhatsApp. So when they came to return to training, the players felt very safe in their environment. And then later on, when it came to a vaccine, you know, again, the club were very proactive. So Nuno spoke publicly about it during a press conference. It was all sort of very deliberately timed messages. And Nuno, you know, this is obviously many months before he left the club, sort of held in such high regard by the fans, you know, and when Nuno's telling you, you know, to get your vaccine, then it would have swayed a lot of fans' opinions if they were sort of on the fence about whether to get one or not. And Wolves put out press releases in conjunction with the local council. So then when it comes to the players getting the vaccine, you add all this background, you add all this comfort that they've got in people that are making decisions for them and guiding them on what to do. So it sort of wasn't even an issue, was how it was described to me. It's not like the players were sat down as a group and told, ignore these conspiracy theories, or, you know, this is the benefit of the vaccine and you know, these are the possible side effects. There wasn't any of that. It was just, guys, you've got to have the vaccine. This is the date you're getting it. And that was it. There was, like I said, there was no big talk. There was no big sit-down chat. I think it's just a cultural thing, really. And the club, I guess, felt that if the players were left up to their own devices, they might not bother, or they might actively choose not to. But when you make it so simple and the players already trust the medical staff so much, which doesn't just come down to coronavirus and the vaccine, you know, they've had an enviable injury record for years now, and the players all tell me, you know, they feel as fit and as healthy as they've ever done before, and that's down to the high-tech sort of state-of-the-art knowledge and equipment that Wolves have used for a few years now. So you've got all that as background as well. You know, you see comments about players worried about losing their place in their team if they have a vaccine, because they might have side effects for a few days, or, you know, there was none of that at Wolves. There were no dissenting voices in the squad. You know, it's not that type of squad. They're not egomaniacs. They've all got egos, sure, but Wolves are careful to sign characters as well as footballers. So you've got that as well. And they sort of made it a fun day out. They all went along to a local health clinic to have their vaccine together, all the players and the staff. And, you know, it was all a bit of a mickey-taking sort of day out, really, and they quite enjoyed it, from what I'm told. Simple as that.
Thanks ever so much to Tim for that. Again, really, really interesting. Wolves seem to be the pioneers at the moment. It'll be interesting to see if other teams follow suit. Taz, just going back to the Kyrie Irving story, I'm going to ask you to get your crystal ball out here. How do you see this getting resolved, and how significant could the ramifications be?
So interesting with the Brooklyn Nets. I do think, as far as the basketball part goes, I think they're still the favorite, even if Kyrie Irving doesn't lace up the sneakers, doesn't lace up the Nikes even for a second. Even as amazing as he is, they're such a really, really talented team. And on the other side, I think Kyrie looks at that and says, I want to be a part of that. That's what he signed up for. So I think it'd be really difficult from a basketball perspective to walk away from this team that is filled with stars. And he could be one of them to help them take it to a championship. And I would say, looking back at his history, last year he said he wasn't going to talk to the media. About 10 days later, he retracted, came back and talked to them. He sat out for, you know, personal reasons last year and wasn't around, but he did come back to the team and, you know, violated policy for COVID regulations last year. But I would say, I don't think the money is the motivating factor here, and that he misses $380K per game that he misses. I think it's more so, you tie all that in, he says some things and then retracts them, as he has you know, multiple times in the past. He's talked about the players starting their own league. He's talked about sitting out. The NBA should have sat out the bubble for the players, and he got on that sort of soapbox to tell his players, you got to sit this out. And he retracted some of those statements. So I say that all because I do believe that eventually he's going to get the jab, and it's going to happen. And I don't think New York is going to change their protocol by any means. So he can wait, try and wait that out, because it's so strange that we got here in the U.S. We got a guy in Washington. He can go play in Brooklyn. He can go play wherever he wants. But there is some thinking that Kyrie's just going to wait it out. I'm going to sit back and say, maybe the government will change their minds at some point. But I think he's going to decide to come join his teammates. And it's a strange scenario in that, you know, I mentioned all that stuff about the money, about the team and all that. He did say he's trying to help out those people who have been, you know, quote unquote, mandated out of a job. And he wants to back those people. But he's not anti-vaccine. He's clear that he's not anti-vaccine. There was a period here in the U.S. where the vaccines were available and the mandates didn't happen. So there was like a 5-month period where he could have gotten the vaccine, chose not to, and then the mandates happened. So some of the logic doesn't necessarily work out, really. And so I think Kyrie, at some point or another, because he has left the door open to come back and play, is going to come back to join his teammates to win a championship that he and Kevin Durant formulated a couple years ago. He made this happen in Brooklyn. So I think he wants to come finish the job here this season, where they are the overwhelming favorites, in my opinion. Again, in my opinion, would be the favorites of this league, even if Kyrie didn't join them, which is something wild to say, because that guy is a special showman.
And in the UK, Adam, I guess things are so complicated because there's so many various stakeholders involved in this. Obviously, in men's football, you've got Premier League, EFL, FA, PFA, then the union. And I know in the case of WSL players, I think age is a massive factor. A lot of them feel like they're so young, they shouldn't need a vaccine, or the fact that they're professional athletes means that their bodies are unlike, you know, us mere mortals. Mm-hmm. But when do you think we may reach the point where things are going to get too difficult, games start getting called off, postponed at such a rate when we're entering the winter months as well, which we've sort of been warned about, that it might, courtrooms might start being involved?
I think it'd be an interesting thing. Is your sense that that's quite widespread in the WSL?
It seems like I haven't got an exact number, but from what I've heard, I don't think the vaccine take-up's been brilliant. And, you know, most people are saying it's not for, you know, conspiracy theories or a lack of information in some capacities. It's perhaps a lack of information education on the fact that regardless of age and regardless of you know, the perfection of your body, let's say, you know, getting the vaccine is still important. I think that seems to be a consistent factor among those who aren't vaccinated. Because also we know from players that have had it, for example, Kai Havertz is someone that I always think of. I mean, he was quite badly affected by it, couldn't come back for a number of weeks after having the virus, was extremely fatigued, you know, the signs of what a lot of people have been living with long COVID for a very long time. And it's interesting how that experience from him hasn't necessarily carried enough weight among teammates and among other people in the league across football to say, well, even someone young, someone extremely fit like him can still be badly affected by it.
Yeah, I mean, I was just looking at each week the Premier League send out data on the number of positive tests. And I mean, there were 6 positive tests between the 11th of October, 17th of October. That's out of 3,044 players and club staff. So, you know, I think at the moment, I don't think there's any major cause for alarm in terms of, you know, matches are going to be called off and things like that. What we do know in the UK is that the number of cases are going up again and have gone over, you know, particularly compared to other countries around us. I think they're now up to around 40,000, which is not good whatsoever. I would be surprised if, you know, given the vaccination rate within the Premier League, whether we get to that stage. Obviously, if you can still get COVID, right, if you've been vaccinated. So you are going to have players missing games this season. In terms of like what happens next, well, you know, the Professional Footballers Association, which is essentially the trade union for footballers, has kind of just taken a gentle persuasion route because of the lack of, you know, of a mandate. So, you know, they're trying to balance, you know, the need to protect the safety of players and their families and the rest of society with the working rights of individuals and their choice. And that tension isn't really going anywhere. So, as we said before, I mean, the percentage is getting better, probably not fast enough. I think it's quite a difficult one because clearly, because those numbers are going up, you can say, you know, it's kind of starting to work as a method. I do think we're probably, you know, I think clubs and the Premier League could have been stronger in terms of, you know, I think at times we've treated people who don't want to get the vaccine as though it's like an ethnic minority or a sexuality, in terms of, you know, like a protected characteristic, in terms of how carefully English footballers danced around the topic, when, you know, I think a lot of people within society are looking at this and thinking, look, I mean, we've all gone and done this. You're in a very privileged position. Will you please go and take this vaccine to try and make sure as many people are as safe as possible? But it's getting better. I think, you know, there will be, it would be quite polemic if FIFA, the World Cup organisers, decide that the World Cup next year requires a vaccine. I think that will bring that. I think that's the one thing that would really reignite this as a major issue. And I think that, I do think that's probably likely to be an issue, because, you know, when you look at the disparity between different parts of the world in terms of the rates of vaccination, the supplies of vaccination, you can very easily see how a World Cup based in the Middle East would want to have, you know, those protections in place of those who are visiting. I don't think that's an unreasonable thing. So what's not quite clear is, you know, is that being used as a, you know, a bit of pressure, as a bit of a dangled threat so that people do it more quickly? Or is it something that's going to come into force and create a real saga when it does come about?
It's an ever-developing story, and I'm sure it will be something that we'll be discussing again in the near future. But until then, Taz, Adam, thanks ever so much for chatting to us today. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Dan. Float.
We're still celebrating Black History Month here at The Athletic, so let's highlight another brilliant read from the dedicated collection of articles that are available on the site right now. Dominic Fifield and Simon Johnson have been looking at John Obi Mikel's controversial transfer to Chelsea. They've done an interview with the former Chelsea defensive midfielder. It also looks into the wave of African talent and how his success in England helped launch the careers of three other Nigerians. So if you haven't checked that out yet, go over to theathletic.com and you'll be able to do just that. And you'll also be able to read all the other articles celebrating Black History Month.
And remember as well, you can read Adam's brilliant article on Saudi Arabia's LGBT plus community and much more by subscribing today for just £3.33 a month. Just head to theathletic.com/footballpod.
Nice one, Flo. So our thanks goes to Taz, Adam and Tim for their contributions to today's podcast. And thanks as ever to Flo as well for joining me. And of course, thanks to all you guys at home or on your commute listening as well. Please, please get involved in the comments section. We'd love to hear your thoughts. And wherever you do get your podcasts, if you're enjoying the show, then please leave a review too. And could a few of you please lay off my accent? This was The Athletic's football podcast. Mark Chapman and Matt Slater will be back with another episode tomorrow, so hopefully you'll join us again.
The Athletic.